Hello, and welcome to our seventh edition of Saving Lives. I'm Bernadette, and I have Art doing all the mechanicals.
Hello.
And we have two very special guests here with us today. They are part of an event. You know what? I'm going to let you guys explain that.
Okay.
So you want to care to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Jay Utes. I'm the senior interventionist for Recovery Centers of America. We've been open for about 2 years now, mm-hmm. and doing well.
That's great. And what's your name?
Hi, my name is Rob Strauber. I'm also an interventionist at Recovery Centers of America. So thanks for having us.
Of course. Thanks for being here. It's funny because I attend meetings like constantly, and when you introduce your name, I was about to repeat your name, just like, hi. I'm like, oh my God, am I the only one that like does that like all the time? So it's amazing to have you guys here. You know, it's like definitely a pleasure, and you're taking time out of your day to do this to help out, like saving lives, right? So I want to start asking questions. So what brought you into this field?
Well, I've been sober for 29 years.
Congratulations.
And, yeah, it's sometimes hard to believe, but you know, when I first got involved, it was really just to help myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I was going to trainings to learn how to keep myself sober. And I was in the restaurant business, and I knew I couldn't go back to that business. I tried many times. And
the lifestyle is tough.
It is really tough. So I kind of just gravitated to the recovery and the treatment field. Mm-hmm. And then it took off from there, and I started off getting a CAC. This is back when you could get a certification. Now you need a degree, and then I went on to get a degree afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Who would have thought you needed a degree in how to be in recovery? You know what I mean? Like, go figure. And it's so cool, too, like hearing you explain and talk about it, because I could see your eyes light up and like with the joy that you have for what you do. And like, you know, you help so many people. Like, it's truly incredible.
The one thing is that even though I'm a licensed counselor and I'm working in the treatment field, my heart is in the recovery field, mm-hmm. which is completely different, but it's treatment is a jump start to that field.
Yep, it goes hand in hand.
Yep.
How about you? What got you started?
Yeah, I'm also in recovery. I started about 10 and a half years ago. I'm now 9 years sober.
Congratulations.
Thanks. And I was working in a completely different field as well, hospitality field. And I was remaining sober through that, but I really felt I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. And I came into a fellowship and started helping other men. And really, that was the only time that throughout my day I was out of myself. So mm-hmm. Just had some things removed from me, like my job.
Right.
And it was in recovery, and it was a tough time for me. And I figured, you know, this was a chance for me to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up. Mm-hmm. And so I gave it a shot. I started to run a recovery house. And in that experience, I was asked to become a coach, and I was coaching 10 out of the 20 guys there, and really started to see the miracles happening with people in early recovery and helping them set goals and mm-hmm. helping them you know, set benchmarks to be able to achieve those. And lo and behold, it was happening on some occasions, and there were some extreme setbacks as well. And I said, you know what, I'm going to follow my heart instead of my head now. And was able to come into the actual treatment field itself and attain some certifications, certified intervention professional, also certified in a invitational model of intervention. And we were able to put together a very large program to help guide families. And that was really the first time I had been able to see the effect that families had on somebody's recovery.
Right.
And I said, oh boy, this is really what I want to do.
go figure too. And they say that you cannot always see it in yourself. You know, you can't always see the miracle happening in yourself. So being able to open that recovery home and to help support all those guys, you know, that's where you see the miracle. You see it in others, you know, and they say life beyond your wildest dreams. Like what better job to have than literally waking up every morning and going to sleep at night knowing that you made a difference in somebody's life that day?
It wasn't my MO.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure.
Yep. And I know too, for me, like I didn't grow up dreaming to, you know, pull myself out of the grips of hell to live the life of recovery, but it is the best life that you could ever imagine, being in recovery. Now you talk about, you know, being an interventionist and a coach and everything. So what exactly does that entail? Do you guys help people get into the treatment? Do you help coach?
You know, when we started Recovery Centers of America, one of the things that we wanted to do, we saw that there was a epidemic, mm-hmm. a crisis out here. And I had been doing interventions for 25, 26 years. And you know, just going in and helping a family and tightening them up and stop the controlling and stop the enabling and get their loved one into treatment, it was like, okay. And I saw that we needed to do more of that. We only treat 1 out of 10 alcoholics and addicts. So 9 die without ever receiving treatment. Mm-hmm. And I know how to do marketing, going to the hospitals, going to the jails and pulling them out. But that's the end. That's where things are, like, if we're waiting just for that, that's bad news.
Especially with the stuff that's out there these days.
Really?
It's one time, that's it. Their life's gone.
And in most cases, when I go in to do an intervention, and Rob can attest to this, you know, it's just a matter of, like, the addict or the alcoholic is running the family, and everyone's scared, walking on eggshells, like, don't know what to do, don't know the hoops to jump through with insurance. So it's putting a little bit of that together. So what we decided to do at Recovery Centers of America was to give free interventions, help out.
Wow.
Okay? So now, I don't know if we're always going to be able to do that, but right now, our goal is to go out and help families get their loved ones into treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to do that. And we're doing that in Massachusetts, in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland. So it's pretty neat. And Rob can talk about that too.
Sure. So we may get a call into our call center, or we might get a call from one of our marketing representatives out in the field and saying, hey, we don't know what to do with our loved one, or we're trying to get them in. And we get pulled in pretty early in the process. Mm-hmm. So what we end up doing is putting a telephone call in to talk to the family, try to understand the dynamics. Jay was talking about tightening that system up.
Right.
We interview them. We ask, you know, where their thought processes lie and what they understand about addiction. There's, you know, there's a lot that people don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So once I can, once we make sure that we know that we have everybody on the same page and that we love and we're concerned for the person we're going to intervene upon, then we put together messaging. So I coach them through that, and then they'll send us letters. It really depends how quickly we come out. We're you know, don't let a lot of grass grow. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. oftentimes you may have a very short window with a family, let alone the individual as well. But we do want to do some of our homework and really put some thought into and help guide that family. And once they have their message together and we understand where they're at and what their bottom lines might be, we'll come out and actually conduct the intervention. So we go over all the logistics, and I answer all the concerns, and we talk about, you know, different scenarios that could happen. And the family then says, okay, you know, today is the day that we're going to choose to help our loved ones in recovery and not help them in their addiction any longer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's beautiful.
And we're in the throes of an epidemic right now. So, right. I mean, people just really don't know where to turn. I mean, that extra help is valuable to a family who's, I didn't know where to turn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I found out about City of Angels through my sister, but you know, God bless for them, because at least they helped educate me, get me the right, you know, information, and we were able to, you know, get her and help, and she's, you know, 14 months in recovery now. So.
And that's the thing of it is, too, Art, is I have a nephew who's in the grips of addiction, and sometimes it's hard for me, you know.
Right.
So it might take someone from the outside to come in and say, no, this is what you need to do, and because you can get caught up into it.
Absolutely. I have the same thing with my nephew, and I, you know, I have to call Kevin and yeah. Robin, because I, you know, it's just too close to home for me.
Right.
It's hard to see somebody go through that, especially right. when you've gone through it yourself and you know there's a way out. I mean, every day I feel like I hear about somebody that I know or that is in my, you know, circle that is passing from this disease. And it's just like, you want to shake them and be like, wake up.
Right.
Like, there is so much more to life than to be in the grips of this. There's so much more.
Well, how about, especially when they've been in treatment 3 or 4 times, it's like, what, like, haul it here. Like,
mm-hmm. Very frustrating.
Really frustrating. I mean, I was in 3 treatments too, but it is frustrating. And to the family, it's like, what do you do? I don't know what to do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very costly, and it affects everyone in the family.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Addiction is a family disease for sure. That's kind of where we try to fill the voids with City of Angels. You know, what we tell parents and family members is, while your loved one's off getting help, you need to get help. You know, and they really need to start attending meetings and learning more about addiction and what they're facing, and mm-hmm. Educate yourself. I mean, you really need to educate yourself.
Well, and there's a lot of fear that goes along with that.
Right.
So I'm glad to hear that you do that and recognize that, because we do the same thing. It's important that our intervention is about getting families into recovery.
Right.
So, you know, it's not just about getting their loved one into treatment and, you know, having set the expectation that all of a sudden, you know, they'll go away for 30 days and come back cured.
Right.
We really want to prepare them for what could happen. And, you know, the likelihood is, since we're dealing with a chronic, progressive, relapsing, potentially fatal mm-hmm. disease, that they need to be prepared for some of those things. And we can help them set up a safety net. And like right. you were saying, with the family groups that you guys offer and some other, you know, family groups throughout the area, I think it's very important. And some families need therapy to go
right.
along with that, too.
Absolutely.
I think that's one of the big problems. We've been talking about it. This is a family disease, but very rarely does a family really get treated. They might get a little support here and there. They sometimes need treatment,
right.
you know.
Absolutely.
And it's very much point the finger at the addict or the alcoholic saying, you go get treatment. Mm-hmm. Everything's going to be fine here.
You know, and that's really where we start with, you know, our family program. So
yes.
that's the basics to get started with, understanding the disease and how you can help your loved one. You know what I mean? Fight this disease.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dedication, and there's things that have to change in your lifestyle and how you treat that person to help them. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, Rob touched on this, but this is really important. A lot of interventionists, their goal is to get the person into treatment, and we do a really good job at that.
Right.
But that's not our goal.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal is to get that whole family into recovery. So there could be multiple interventions along the line. You could get someone into detox, and he doesn't want to go to rehab. And
right.
We're back in there fighting, doing,
right.
get phone calls, getting them into rehab. Then they come out, they don't want to go to outpatient. They might not go to a recovery house. Those are all little interventions along the way. And we're
Absolutely.
There the whole, but it's also the family too. The family needs to be tightened up and get some help and get in there and get the supports and get.
And the knowledge to learn. Because even for myself, when I went into treatment, I thought I was going into treatment to just come off of the stuff that
right.
made my life unmanageable, not realizing that like everything I did was making my life unmanageable, and everything I touched and picked up. But, and even like, you know, my family members, they thought that like I would be able to go there, detox and be cured. Like, and it's like, no, this is not how that works by any means.
If I could change one thing, I would change the word alcoholism, because it has so little to do with alcohol. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's like, yeah, that's what we drank, but like, I'm 29 years from drinking, and I'm still, I could be screwed up. It's
why did we drink?
All of us.
Right. You
know, why did we smoke that joint? Right. Why did we, you know what I mean, do that, whatever we did, you know, to escape from something.
Right.
Yes.
And until you get to the root of that, you know, it's just going to be an endless vicious cycle, you know. Mm-hmm. We try to support people as well when they get out of recovery, so they don't, you know, we try to get them into a recovery house. I mean, you have to coach parents that they're not going to go away for 28 days or 30 days or 45 days, whatever you can get, and have them come home and they're going
to
be healed.
And don't try to throw them a welcome home party by any means, because that is just not,
But again, you're only 30 to 45 days into recovery. Mm-hmm. You don't want to bring them home, because that's just putting them in the same surroundings that put them where they were, and they're going to fall right back, you know, and they're going to relapse, and, you know, it just starts that cycle all over again. So we try to help them get into a recovery house where they could still get their therapy, work their job. You know, we could support them in the end. They can get to their meetings until they are ready to get off on their own.
I think where we differ is that we build a relationship.
Right.
So, you know, when I got sober, I had other men in my life that came alongside me and said, hey, you don't have to do this alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, what we so often will hear, if even we get our loved ones into treatment, is, well, you have to go to Al-Anon, you have to go to Nar-Anon, or you have to go to these family groups, and that's it. And that's what the treatment providers are saying. And the fact is that they're not always right there to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whoever might be listening in regards to that, I just want them to know that they need to know that they have a partner in all of this. So, you know, give us a call. Let us walk through this. You know, be the checks and balances. So, you know, when you start to see the same patterns, or the hair on the back of your neck is going up again, and, you know, you just have that sense of impending doom, you're probably right.
You know, like I said, my daughter's in recovery for, you know, 14 months. This was the first holiday this past Christmas that she actually recognized there was other people in her life beside herself, which was refreshing, you know, very refreshing to see. But for, you know, that first year, I looked at her, you know, with one eye open, you know, like, what are you doing? When she came in, when she, you know, when she went out, did you look different? Were you, you know? And she had some things. She kind of traded heroin for alcohol at some point in time. I mean, you know, she's totally does nothing now, but it was just replacing one thing with another thing. You know what I mean? And it's going down the same path. So luckily she met someone, she realized it. She's been going to her therapy and stuff and, you know, finally doing good. But it was a long battle, you know? But fellowship is so important. You know what I mean?
It's huge.
That's part of what we do with the radio station. That's part of what we do with City of Angels, is try to introduce them to somebody that walked in their shoes almost exactly.
Right. I know for me, too, like, I didn't know how to have, like, pure relationships with people at all. You know, I had those minuscule, like, passing by, and I felt like I went through friends a lot, but it wasn't until recovery and going to meetings and like getting my hand up and just sharing where I was at and that I was afraid and I was scared and I didn't want to be there. I had, you know, for myself, women come surround me and they're like, they picked me up. Like when I was on my knees, they picked me up, and now I'm able to pick them up if they're, you know, on their knees or having a bad day. And I truly now know how to be a friend, how to be a daughter, how to be a partner. Like, recoveries teaches me just how to like live like the most amazing life I could ever think of.
I think this is one of the most satisfying things for me, is to see people like you, you know what I mean, in recovery and doing well, and you know what I mean? It's just like a rebirth all over again, you know?
And it gives those family members that, you know, are seeing their loved ones struggle still, it gives them hope that it is possible. And like for people like you coming out and, you know, devoting your life to this, you know, without you guys and people speaking about the reality of this disease and the, how insidious it is, more and more people I feel like would be dying throughout the day, because they need people to be like, it's okay, you're not alone. It's, I know you're scared, I know you're frightened, but there is a way out and there is hope. You know, just like, just not being afraid to share.
So if someone had a loved one that actually needed an intervention or needed some help, and you know they wanted to, you know, have you step in and give them a hand, how would they go about doing that?
The best way to do that is call our 1-800-RECOVERY and ask I need help with my loved one. And they'll get a little bit of information, but they'll get us right over to us, and we'll take it from there. So 1-800-RECOVERY is definitely number to call.
That's good. It's a good one to remember, too.
That's an easy to remember.
Yeah.
And that's why we bought it. Because there's so many numbers, like, you know, you hear on the radio, and I'm driving, it's like 847, and that's like,
why? You can try to remember that. It's like impossible.
1-800-RECOVERY is easy.
Yeah, it's very, very, very easy. So when they do contact you, you know, what can they expect,
mm-hmm.
you know?
It's the first steps in the protocol for that.
Yeah, so you'll speak with a care advocate, and they'll take some information, and they'll talk to you about the situation and what's at hand. And what they would say to you then is they'll pass that over, and you'll get a phone call from one of our interventionists. We then will dive into more detailed questions about the whole dynamics and demographics and, you know, logistics of the whole situation. You're going to get an explanation of everything. And we approach intervention depending on what the family feels comfortable with. So mm-hmm. the beauty of what we do is that we don't stick to just one approach. We have many. So, you know, think of them as arrows in the quiver, so to speak. And this is insidious of the disease, and we need to basically throw everything we've got at them. So, you know, you might be spoken to, or you understand about invitational models and Johnson models, more confrontational, and really come up with a plan that's going to fit your loved one the best way, and that'll fit within your family system that you're comfortable with. And then we would do a pre-intervention that could be either on the phone or in person, where we go over all the logistics, and you'll get to learn how to do the messaging or the letter writing, and we review all of that, and then we set up the actual event itself, and we'll come out and conduct that. Mm-hmm. It's our hope that, you know, we can take them right to treatment. The beauty of what we are doing here at Recovery Centers of America is that we recognize that we're not a fit for everybody, but we our mission statement is to get over 1 million people into meaningful recovery. So, you know, don't let that stop you from giving us a call if it's something that you feel your loved one would be beneficial to go someplace else. I mean, we're not hindered by that. So I think mm-hmm. it's important that, you know, we're doing those things for the right reason, and we're trying to place your loved one into what fits them best.
And is it typically who calls you? Is it usually like, you know, even the pre-intervention, it hasn't nothing to do with the person that needs intervention? Is it always just the family?
Well, it's usually the family in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But we've done calls where, I think you had one yesterday, because you got the call and I said, what's up with that intervention? And you said they're on their way to treatment. So it had to be done over the phone.
That's great. That actually happened. It was incredible.
Well, I didn't feel like driving.
But you know, Rob actually said it earlier too. And when someone is ready for help, that's a very small window. You know what I mean? So if you're available as an interventionist to remove those barriers for them, they're going to go, mm-hmm. you know?
And that's the important thing about intervention is people, I hear families say, you're never going to get this one in. This is the hardest case you ever. And the truth of it is, most addicts and alcoholics don't want to live the life they're living.
Right.
Okay. They're caught up in the disease where it's minimizing or rationalizing, intellectualizing, blaming. And it keeps them using
stuck.
Where they say, I'm going to stop. I said I was going to stop. I said it for 9 months every single day. This is it. I'm not going to use anymore. And still use. So we know that of addicts and alcoholics. But that window is short.
Right.
And short, you have to dive in and get
You have
get
to take opportunity of
and
it.
And sometimes it's just a matter of adding support to the family and showing the individual that they're doing something different, right? So it's so easy to get caught in the same patterns where, you know, if A happens, then B will happen. And you see that dynamic, and likelihood is that's been going on long before the individual's first use. So we're not emotionally attached to their loved ones, so we can come in and almost see the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And say, okay, you know what, try it this way, and let's do it a different way. And then sometimes that's all that it takes.
This is Kevin and I's favorite saying. If you've seen one addict, how many addicts have you seen? One addict.
I was like, that's a trick question. All right, that's a trick question. I was like, whoop, right in my head.
And that's because every case is different.
Yeah.
You know, there's not one. I mean, there are probably similarities, but, you know, they're all unique in one way or another.
Really? You hear the term, we have an addictive personality. Well, there's no such thing as an addictive personality.
That's what I said at first. I was like, I'm not an addict or anything. I just have an addictive personality. Dude. Yeah, if they could see me rolling my eyes, well, they can't see me. I was like...
denial, the first sin.
Exactly, denial.
I had a case I think I was over... either Thanksgiving or Christmas break, where the kid came home from college and said, I'm addicted to Percocet.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mother called up, what do I do? I said, well, let's get him in. And so he was sick for a couple of days, then he was going to go back to school. I guess it was Thanksgiving. And so the mother called me up and said, well, he's going to go back to school for a couple of weeks and finish this, and then we'll deal with it. And I said, let me just ask you a few questions. If this was cancer, would you let your son go back? And she said, no. I said, how about diabetes? If he had a 700 at sugar level,
mm-hmm.
No, I wouldn't let him go back. I said, well, how about if he had asthma? No, I wouldn't let him go back. And I'm there, yet this disease will probably kill your son, and you're letting them go back. And she said, what do I do? I said, tell him he has to go to treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And she called me the next day, and she goes, it worked, he's going.
Oh, that's
and
so good.
I know, but I was like, it's not that hard, right. You know?
And that's, people don't see it like that. They don't see this disease as like, it's just gonna kill you. Like, that's all at once. I picture it like this like demonic looking creature, and it's just waiting, lurking in the corners, waiting for that one lapse of judgment to just pounce you, because it only wants you dead, and it is so patient.
Right.
It is very patient.
And it's killing our 25, 22-year-olds in every state.
It's killing mm-hmm. our next generation.
Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, yep. Scary. It's even younger. Like, the kids I hear about picking up heroin, I'm like, I didn't even know what it looked like. Are right. you kidding me?
But that's really why we need all the efforts. You know, I mean, the theme of our, I also run the City of Angels, walk, our 5K mm-hmm. walk in September.
I was going to say, it's September, right?
Yeah. And it's hard to, you know, to not stay involved, you know what I mean, at some point in time, and just keep the word going and the word going and the word going. Mm-hmm. But it's to get more people involved, to stay involved, to educate yourself, and to get the communities to work together. I mean, our theme was conquering our addictions together.
We have a caller.
Saving lives. Hey. Hold on one second.
You're on the air.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Fern. It's Nicole.
Hey, Nicole. How are you? Are you with Daryl?
Hey, Fern.
Hey, Daryl. So we are sitting here with two interventionalists, and we are talking about the amazing work that they do to get people into recovery. I know you both are in recovery and have some years.
Yeah, I have 3 years clean. I'll have 4 years clean on May 1st.
Awesome.
Congratulations. Yay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is so amazing. And did you have an intervention? Or did Daryl have an intervention?
Neither one of us did, but we have a close friend of the family who they had one for their loved one, and it worked really well. Mm-hmm. And her family member has been in recovery ever since.
Oh, that's so good to hear. I know I had an intervention, too, with my family. And here I am, talking on a radio show, all about recovery. So what's recovery giving you guys?
I'm sorry, What was that?
What's recovery giving you guys?
Just our whole life. My life is completely different. We own a house. We have two dogs. I've had the same job since I've been clean. I have a meaningful relationship with my family. My life looks completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So life comes back, right?
I didn't even have a life. No, I got a life. You know, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. And I'm so glad you guys are a part of my life.
No, we love you, Bern.
I love you guys.
See, now that's the hope, you know, that we hope will reach someone.
Nicole and Daryl were the first people that actually showed me how to be a friend and how to have a friend successfully. Like,
that's nice.
It's amazing, the people you meet. They're amazing people. We're the most awesome. I must say, people in recovery, we're freaking awesome. I don't know about you guys. I'm just saying. But thank you guys for calling. I love you so much. I'll touch base with you a little later about our
oils. All right. I love you, too. Right, you're awesome. Bye, guys.
Bye now.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. It is. It's like it's amazing, the people that you meet from all walks of life. And you become close with them and you develop these relationships. And, you know, it's so cool that you guys are here, you know, that you do interventions. Because, like, I had an intervention and it was like that, you know, that show Intervention? It was like that, pretty much. Except they didn't write the letters. They just said it to me right then and there.
So is that process kind of like the TV show?
I pretty much do the Johnson model. So, and that's what I've been taught. So I've been doing that for 28 years or 27 years. And, you know, there's a lot of different models of interventions. And Rob has been certified in ARISE, which is a great model that's very invitational. And we really have to take a look at the family and say, what is best for them?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're doing an intervention, You got one shot at this.
Right.
You don't want to be, we messed up on this. We'll be back tomorrow and we'll try it again, you know?
Yeah, the person might be
long gone. So it's important that we do the right approach. We look at it and it's not what's, and I pass off if Rob's going to be better at it, it's like, hey, listen.
So you have that feel over
the
situation.
We've worked together for a while, so I mean, it makes it real simple and saying, hey, you know what, this isn't going to work for me. Let me have Jay call or vice versa. And the questions that we ask them really is about, you know, trying to figure out what's the best approach with that. So it is neat to be able to look at it a couple of different ways and talk that through. I mean, I love the invitational model because it involves the individual right from the beginning. And it transfers the recovery from the family shoulders and the loved one's shoulders onto the person of concern. So the sooner that we can do that, the better off the individual is going to be in their own recovery. You know, real simple to place a lot of blame. Jay was talking about blaming other people, but if we can get somebody to get to that point. Now, sometimes the situations are of such crisis that we don't have time to invite somebody and we just come in and I can quickly turn that around and say, hey, you know, I get it. You know, you weren't necessarily thrilled that we came in the way that we did. Appreciate you listening. Now everything else will be above board and transparent moving forward. So.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the person might not have had a formal intervention like we do, it could have been a DUI.
Right.
And that's an intervention. Or the boss saying, you know what? You're fired. Mm-hmm. Okay? Or the parent saying, enough is enough, out.
Right.
That's interventions. Okay? And hopefully you take that intervention and you can guide them into treatment. If not, then they're going to need a lot of those to where they finally say, you know what, I can't stand living this way. But then that's when suicide comes in and or overdose where I can't do it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to live this way.
I think most of the time, though, I mean, we're dealing with somebody who doesn't want to live like that. They're not necessarily at that stage. I mean, certainly if they... or have harm to hurt themselves or somebody else, then they're not going to go to drug and alcohol rehab. We're going to help them get the help that they need. But you know, it's important that they know they have an advocate as well, because right. you know, some of the symptoms, it's not just the drugs or the drinking, you know, the bottle that you were saying, you know, it was you know, those are the symptoms of the disease, but other symptoms are, you know, court issues and being arrested and losing your job. And we can help advocate for the individual as well. So it's important that, you know, we come in and if things start to slide or go sideways, that we maintain that and try to meet the individual where they're at. Because, right. you know, quite honestly, even if somebody says, no, I'm not going to go today, they might very well go the next day. Or the following day, and we don't want to shut that door.
You know, and that's
that.
What we do with City of Angels. We, you know, they'll come to us maybe 10 times.
You guys
times,
do a lot know? Of intervention. Mm-hmm. Sure.
But they'll come to us off the street with nothing because, you know, mom and dad ain't having it. You know, we got them to Naranon, and they were like, ding, the light bulb.
Yeah, you're right.
So once their options really start to run out, they're really going to be more interested in recovery or trying to seek it, because they don't really want to be that way. Mm-hmm. It's just you took the easy road for them to stay, you know what I mean, addicted, instead of them seeking recovery by, you know, enabling them in little small ways, whether that's buying them a pack of cigarettes, a roof over their head, you know what I mean, whatever that is. So,
well, and it's about providing that motivation. Right. And it's about raising that bottom, right? And when we talk about hitting rock bottom, I don't believe that somebody has to do that. I think we can create that.
Right.
And then all we're doing is creating decisions, mm-hmm. right? The family's not left without choices. They have, you know, they now have a new eye on what they can move and do. And, you know, and the individual has choices too. And again, if I can boil it down to a message of, we're not going to support your addiction, we're only going to support your recovery, then I think we're going to get someplace.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And they say too, like, you know, your bottom is when you decide to chuck the shovel out of your hands and stop digging. Your bottom doesn't have to be the same as somebody else's bottom. Just stop digging yourself a grave.
Right. Right. See, a lot of the kids that we deal with, you know, or that are coming in off the street have nothing. You know, they have no money, no insurance card, no IDs. So we really have to take them through that process of helping them get some of that back, you know, before we can even attempt to get them into a state program. Mm-hmm. Governor Christie's made that a lot easier through, you know, ReachNJ. But they're still working to make that even better yet, you know. Right. So, but they're going to come in and, you know, we support them. We just keep, you know what I mean, until they're ready. You know, we're there for them, and they need to know that they can call.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you talk about, I think that we have to do a better job at, is in the recovery process. We have a program at Recovery Centers of America called Second Chance. And if someone finishes treatment and does outpatient, and they can apply for maybe a position within the company. Mm-hmm. We started the company 3 years ago, and we're getting close to 700 employees.
Wow.
Which we're helping a lot of people and get into recovery, but we're also
helping them with employment.
Helping with employment. So it's tough to get sober and say, go work at McDonald's for $10 an hour, and there's nothing wrong with working at McDonald's, mm-hmm. but you're not going to put yourself through college working at right. McDonald's. So they got to have some kind of hope, some kind of like change
Goal.
Here. Goals.
That's actually a wonderful program, because that happens a lot. What happens when they get arrested? You know, and I'm going to tell you,
it's hard to find
my
jobs.
Daughter went through this. No charges. Never. I mean, you know, she was charged, never went to court, everything was dropped, but you Google her name. You know, and every article about her arrest comes up, you know, to this day. So even though their court records and their, you know, law enforcement record gets expunged if they do everything they're supposed to do for, you know, to continue their recovery, it's still hard for them to get work because people Google. I mean, HR departments Google people now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the search records, I mean, they pay for,
right,
you know,
right.
record searches, and they show up too. You know, and our prisons are overloaded with people that have committed nonviolent drug-related offenses that really shouldn't be sitting there, and they don't get any kind of treatment, and they come out, and then they're not able to be employed, and what opportunities do they have?
I think people fresh out of recovery also make great advocates for recovery because they're walking the walk and they're talking the talk, and I think that has a bit of satisfaction with it because they're kind of giving back at the same time.
Just to share a little bit about me, I have a felony. And when I got into recovery, I've gone on, got a licensed professional counselor. I had to fight that and justified why I got arrested and why. And I've been a teacher and I had to do the same thing. And there was a period of time I had 8 recovery houses. And I was going to go for a pardon just to give hope to the guys that have gone through my houses to, hey, you can have a felony and put it behind you. Mm-hmm. Now, the process was so
costly
and that I didn't finish that process. But there is some hope. Like in New York, they do a lot with pardoning. Mm-hmm. If you stay clean for 5 years, there's things to do. We've got to work on that. We've got to come together mm-hmm. and fight that because... 'cause
if you have those, say, charges, and you become in recovery and you're clean, you still have that, like, you feel defeated in a sense.
I'll just tell you a little story. I was probably 20 years sober, and the jail I was in asked me to come back and be a consultant. And so I'm there being a consultant, coming up with how to get people into recovery, and it's like, hold it. It was...
You were on the other side of the fence too, there.
But I was like, that's okay, amazing. You can come around full circle where they're paying you right? to help them out. And
I felt the same way when I started working at the treatment center I had gone to. And then also I was speeding to get to a prison commitment to, you know, go and share. And I'm thinking, what's the irony of this, right? To be driving 90 miles an hour.
I'm waiting for you to say you got pulled over, too.
No,
like, where are you
no,
going? You're like, I'm going to the prison to speak.
Yes.
They'll be like, okay, go.
Yeah, but no fear of being searched. Yeah. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. I had actually went to, they had a drug forum at the Democratic National Convention. I mean, it was held by, I think, Facing Addiction or something like that. But it was really interesting. And it was co-sponsored by, I think, the Patrick Kennedy Foundation or something. But I spoke with the sheriff of like Mariposa County, Florida, and she has a program where they take like the snack money that the county would make back. She takes all what do they pay the, they pay them $2 a day or something for their labor. She takes all that money and puts it into an addiction program for the inmates and works with like City of Angels and other nonprofit type things down in the Florida area where they can, you know, have programs support them after they get out, support them while they're, you know, incarcerated towards recovery. And I was like, wow, what a novel concept. I mean, you know what I mean? It's not costing anybody any money. And, you know, it's a little bit of snack change and you're changing lives.
Right.
You know, maybe that needs to happen more, you know what I mean, across the country.
And if I, looking back at, because I've been in treatment and I put recovery organizations together, Faces and Voices, I was a founder and a PROACT and stuff like that. I think the big word is hope. You got to mm-hmm. give people some kind of hope. Absolutely. To get them through. And that's what recovery is all about. There's going to be some tough days, but if you work at it, there's a lot of hope at the mm-hmm. end of that tunnel there.
Just like Pandora's box.
Yeah.
All the evils were let out in the world, but the one thing that remained in the box was hope. You cannot survive without hope. You can't get through anything. It's a lot of it's too, like in our mindset and like how we, you know, our thoughts can manifest and become real. So like that, I'm still an addict, right? So I still have crazy thoughts. It's just, what do I do about it? What do I act upon that bad thought? No, obviously I will call someone, share about it, but it's okay to have those thoughts too. I'm human, for crying out loud.
We all need somebody that we can entrust to turn to when mm-hmm. we have that weak moment. You and I had that conversation. And it's imperative for your recovery to, you know, not listen to the little devil on this and, you know, call your sponsor or your fellowship or whoever. And, you know,
well, if you look at, no matter if they're an artist or a musician or a business person, there's usually some kind of mentorship where it brings the people up to that level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's great about the 12-step programs where, you know, I came in, I thought I knew all the answers.
Welcome.
And you gave me a little bit of information, which made it even more dangerous, you know. But the greatest thing that happened was I had the right people that were just giving me that avenue to, like, and I listened to them, and I just did the right thing.
I just think it's funny, too, when I had come into recovery, I started going to a church and to 12-step fellowships, and then, you know, I was hearing one message like, hey, you just need to have faith, and I'm like, but I'm that guy you have to show faith to, right? So I needed the right people in my life that would come alongside and, you know, not as much just pressure me to do what they thought I needed to do, but give me enough space to learn from the mistakes that I was doing. You know, and for me, that wasn't easy. I I'm a guy. I was in my 30s. I had been through a marriage and subsequently going through a divorce, and I didn't trust anybody. So, you know, but I was told, you know, just keep coming around, keep showing up, and we'll see what's going to happen here. And they were right. They were right. And despite myself, even though, you know, a lot of those days were horrific, you know, they were still better than when I was going out and drinking. And, you know, once I went through that, it was interesting because then I could see, hey, there's a lot of other people that are out there hurting too. And how can I then be a best of service and help them?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it was a year and a half into my recovery before I even asked my sponsor how he was doing. So, you know, I think it's important that, you know, we take what we can get from all of this, trust other people. And then, you know, once we're in a different position, then yes, we've got to give it back. But, you know, this is a journey. There's no destination through any of this. Right. And I've made tons of mistakes along the way. I'm sure I've probably, you know, made a baker's dozen today. And, you know, but I don't have to drink or drug or over that. And, you know, I continue to put myself in the solution. And, you know, I think that's what I'm most grateful for.
Those are the only things you can really do, right? I mean, you can not be part of the problem and be part of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And you can live your life honestly. And guess what? We make mistakes. And as long as we learn from them and we move forward, I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, we're human beings. We all do it.
Exactly.
Some of us just beat ourselves up a little harder.
Yes. And, like, you know, we don't have to play those tapes over and over again anymore. You know, when we play the tapes, now we need to play them out to see the consequence.
But again, recovery is a process.
Right,
it's not a cure. It takes time and work and effort. It's worth it, and it's fun.
It is fun.
You know, once you get a life back, and you actually heard it through your last caller, you look at life. They have a life.
And stuff, and you know, you get filled up. You get filled up with trips and relationships, and I mean, God, I've done more fun things in recovery than I've ever done anywhere other than any other time in my life.
I can remember sitting on a bar stool saying, I'm going to go skiing. Every year I never did it. And then when I got sober, I was like, hey, oh, I can't just be talking about this. I got to do it now. Right. You know, I started going skiing. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, and I don't think I would have kept going around if I didn't start to do some of those fun things because, you know, then what's the difference, you know? Right. And but, you know, wherever you're at, just, you know, trust the process. And that goes for families too, because, you know, it's real hard to see the forest through the trees while you're in the midst of your loved one's addiction. And, you know, there is hope there too. So
yep, that hope needs to be there. And you know, if you're listening, you know, tell us how they can learn more about I know you do some speaking engagements where you know, they can come out and actually, you know, hear, experience, speak with you firsthand.
We're doing an event tonight I'm not sure where it's at.
Not Ballroom.
I was going to say somewhere in Jersey.
But this is exactly what we want to do. Is we want to come out and introduce ourselves, tell them what we're doing, and let families know that we're here for them. And if we can help them out, and sometimes it's just guiding them or over the phone, or if it does mean that we have to come out and do an intervention, we'll set that mm-hmm. up. But we want to get the word out that Recovery Centers of America is here.
And it's going to get bigger.
It's going to get bigger.
So tonight's engagement, is it open to public? So anybody listening, are
anybody
they able
listening
to go?
Can come. Yep, absolutely.
Do you have the address to that?
It's the Nottingham Ballroom in Hamilton, New Jersey. Nottingham. It'll come up on any MAP program.
Awesome.
And free food. You know, and I think it's also important that if any families are listening, if you're part of a family fellowship, we will come out and speak to your group. We can speak to them privately beforehand, or if you need any help, we do a lot of advocacy as well with talking to your local municipalities or you know, different agencies as well. I think it's important. I do want to put a plug in for, you know, being able to stop the silence, you know, mm-hmm. from this. I know Jay will share probably, he's got a good analogy in regards to, you know, when treatment for cancer and diabetes really took off. But I think it's important to know that we have to stop the silence. We need to talk about mm-hmm. solutions, not just the problem. You know, the problem exists here in Jersey and in Pennsylvania and Indiana and, you know, New Mexico. It's all over, and we just need to be able to let you guys know that there is a solution.
Mm-hmm. What Rob mentioned was when we look back at other diseases like cancer, at one point in the 40s and 30s, if you had cancer, you didn't talk about it. It was very much very silent, very mm-hmm. And what happened was when about 20% of the population started to get treated for cancer, it kind of opened up where it was more talked about. Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, they have TV commercials, hospitals, Fox Chase.
There's advocates.
There's a lot of... And the same thing happened with HIV, mm-hmm. where that was a very shameful disease. And until about 20% of that population got treated, it just opened up the whole world, and the funding went towards it, the research went towards it. And now, if you have HIV, it's not a death sentence mm-hmm. anymore. It's very much treatable, and you can maintain. And that's what we're hoping with addiction. We're treating about 10% right now. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping that Recovery Centers of America, that one of our goals is to change the landscape of addiction treatment, where our belief is, you know, we pick them up in black cars and we take them to the nicest facilities. And we know it's a shame-based disease. Mm-hmm. And I picked up this kid. I was driving the Mercedes, and he got in the car, and he called his dad, and he said, they got me in a Mercedes. And I could hear the father say, you deserve to be in a Mercedes. Mm. So, you know, that's what it we want to change that. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping that through, you know, our interventions and the radio and all this, that more and more people will be treated to where it isn't shame-based disease. Mm-hmm. People come out and get treated for it. I actually think that with the heroin epidemic, I'll tell this little story. I stopped in a bar to watch a football game. I was trying to listen to it on a radio, and it was getting too excited. So I pulled over and I grabbed a sandwich, and I'm sitting next to two alcoholics, okay, who were complaining about the heroin addicts, okay? And I was like, hold on, they're getting away.
That's a Kodak moment.
I was like, hold on here, you know.
Oh, my God, that's great.
I think the heroin epidemic has taken some heat off the alcoholics.
Yeah. And it's a shame that it's grown to, you know, the As far as it's gone, I mean, you know, we're losing 150 something kids a day,
or a day
to addiction, a day, and that's just amazing. So now more than ever, we really need, you know what I mean, these coordinated efforts. You know, the you guys, you know, from recovery centers doing these interventions, offering your services to families who don't know where to turn. Nonprofits, police department. I mean, we're actually working with police departments now, helping them put programs together where they're not putting you in jail. They're calling
exactly
to get you into recovery.
We have a bunch of police officers that like they're calling us first, or up in Massachusetts, like Gloucester.
Right.
I mean, we have a kid that we put in treatment. He's coming up on a year sober. Mm-hmm. And then NBC or so, one of those, tracked him the whole way. And we actually hired him.
Wow.
So see, we have 12 municipalities here in Mercer County, you know, in central New Jersey. And four of them have care programs, you know, where they will work. So we have a lot of work to do there yet. But it's a start, and it's refreshing to hear that people are at least willing to listen.
And that's a big change. Where instead of lock them up, it's like they saw, hey, we cannot lock them up. You can't build any more prisons.
I've watched video after video on Facebook from police chiefs saying, we're not going to arrest our way out of this, you know.
No,
and they're putting their own programs in place.
Well, the amazing thing about that is the money's there to be able to help these individuals.
Right.
Every dollar spent on treatment would cost $7 to incarcerate somebody. So if we could divert that and use that to help treat somebody, we could really make a dent.
I know, too. For instance, my dad, he's a captain in Philadelphia on the police force. So not only should I get you guys in touch with him, he thought of people like me as, you know, very low, like scum of the earth. And it wasn't until his daughter had to go through this and, you know, with the grips of the disease, for him to realize, like, wow, this is, like,
these
kids need help. This is really a disease. This is a problem. And, like, it changed his whole perspective on it. And, you know, he's more about let's get them help as opposed to let's lock them up. Because that's all he saw and that's all he knew at the time. I mean, he works in Philadelphia, for crying out loud.
I have a police captain, and he'll give my card and said, if you call him, I'll give you I want you to get treatment.
Right.
And so that's nice. That's a change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, even part of our care program is, you know, they're going to get help. And if they follow that program through for the year, you know, and seek recovery, they'll also expunge any legal
stuff.
Records that they had attached with that particular infringement. So
a lot of our interventions are court related, and Rob and I will go to the court with them, testify, and tell them what they've accomplished, their treatment plan, their recovery plan. And you don't know, I've had where the plaintiff, I forget the guy's name, where he takes care of the courtroom.
Bailiff.
The bailiff. He came over to me. He said, I see you here a lot. And I had the recovery
center.
And he said, can I have your card? Because I have a nephew. And that does good when something like that happens.
Right. I'm going to make sure to get a bunch of your cards, too. I know that we're like running out of time.
We're also going to put Jay and Rob's information up on the Saving Lives webpage.
Great. Okay. Awesome. And remember, it's 1-800-RECOVERY.
1-800-RECOVERY. We'll put the phone number up there. We're going to put a link back to their phone number, their website, so you can get more information if you need it. Reach out.
Perfect. So I say our goodbyes, I'm going to end with this. Addiction. The Greeks did sum it up. Addictus means a slave to. So when you can't give up as your mind's on something you crave to, be it sex or another movie, a martini or something groovy, if repeated over and or until the life is almost over, then you would have to admit you are in a powerless pit. Unmanageable effort yield not, that all you did had turned to pot. An unmanageable life is a big concept, an admission that's hard from the onset. So if you're sticking a needle in your neck or drink from dawn without regret, what the heck? You might just be an addict too, but fear, there's no place for you. It's right here by my side. In a meeting, you needn't hide. Trust God, clean house, help another. From these three, we do recover. Come to hang out with us in the fellowship. You might just learn to relinquish it. A new life beyond wildest dreams can be more than what it seems. Just show up to see miracles happen, even if your light's not happening. So I'm Bernadette, and
I'm Jay.
I'm Rob.
And Art.
And have a great time.
And Art's lovely radio voice. And have a wonderful night. We love you guys.
Breath flows.